Still gotta say good morning, because it's not noon yet. So, greet you, it's good morning, and I'm really happy to be here.
Thanks for coming back to America and California and Jigoshi.
And Jigoshi. Yeah. So, being here for me is always a great opportunity to just really connect with friends and spending some really valid time together exploring the Dharma. And though this invitation is for you to share your thoughts and what you want to say and come and go when you know you have a clock here, but you're still ready to go if you have to go. And what I want to bring up is actually just this moment, you know. That's like one of the basic Zen premise that's being captured in the Zen phrase of like, just this is it, you know, just this moment, just this presence right here is it, and it being like a synonym for enlightenment, Buddha, God, whatever language you want to put on it. And so the Zen saying, the sudden saying of like, this is it, is rounding it all up of like, wake up to this very moment and just be really, really present. And so I find that I myself have struggled over the years of finding the entrance to what this is. And at this point right now, I'm working fine with just contemplating impermanence. But I think everybody has maybe their own entrance. Like it could be, you know, following your breath, or doing a painting, or cooking, or whatever activity you are engaging in that actually brings you the closest into the present awareness of this moment. And then from the presence of this moment onward, you know, deeper. So that's like when we say that a certain activity that brings you not only to the present moment, but it also brings you deeper into the present moment and helping you understand this present moment. And so I will chime in if you say, yes, that's for me, it's this and this and this is doing the job. So I maybe want to explain my job. I found really works is, what does the job is contemplating impermanence. So what it does for me is like, if I think about how impermanent this moment is and how it changes, then there's a certain like openness that comes for me and a deep sadness. I often think of my parents and my loved ones, and I think about how they change, and especially my parents, how they're gonna die. And it's kind of hard just thinking about it, and it makes me really sad. And what really helped me was to not contract with that is to listen to Trungpa Rinpoche say, hold that sadness. Hold the sadness together. This basically is the present moment. He called it the great Eastern Sun, but I'm not sure what the language means. But I heard it like, hold the sadness of this life, of this moment, together with this moment, and then keep going. Because this moment is, you know, I almost want to say, it has a dimension that we don't know yet. Like, we know two-dimensional, we know three-dimensional. But then there's, you know, people call it fifth-dimensional, sixth-dimensional, however you experience it. But there's a certain, another dimension that this moment has, and that we want to open to. And so being able to hold all that this moment brings is an entry to go deeper. So like I said, for me to contemplate this impermanence, get in touch with my sadness about this truth, and it's like it helped me to get the past steps deeper. So whatever that does for you, I don't know, you know, like, You have different ways of entering that. But it's still this moment. Like this moment. And actually, I found it, like, for example, very valuable right now to be in this container right now with you, my friends, and this present moment, and having this, like, soccer game going on. That's, like, really important for, like, two-thirds of the world right now or something.
Particularly German.
We're like, you're German people.
And you're not at all.
And I'm not at all.
Concerned about myself. No.
Because it has a strong tie with my family. And, like, so, like, I can see how many things push me because they're important to me. And I had this glimpse while being here with you that all, you know, this moment kind of is this kind of learning to hold the relationship with everything in our life at the same time. And, you know, and with that I don't mean things that are not there. For example, like, I have, for example, I can get very irritable at times during my cycle. But if I'm not on that point, I am still accountable for it, especially for actions I have done based on that. But if it's not there, I don't need to directly address it. But if it's there, I'm having a relationship with it. And if it's not there, I'm still having a relationship with my habitual formation being irritable, for example. And so I thought, but, you know, we can't do things that are not here. So we just address things that are here because it helps calm our nervous system. But then it also helps us to stay open. Because if you stretch yourself too much, then you lose the sense of creativity because you're too stressed. You're, like, too... You're not flexible enough. Like, if something is too stretched, and if it's too loose, because it's not too tight, not too loose. I think that very much accounts for meeting this very moment. So now the art is, like, seems to be the art of Zen is to be, like, build these relationships to everything that's present in the room. For example, there is this natural thing of, like, you prepare a talk, right? And part of me was like, well, I can prepare a talk, but on the other side, I won't know until I'm actually with the people, right, that I'm talking to and with, to, like, really see what's poignant. And I still might totally miss a point with the words I'm uttering right now, but you're part of it, you know? I mean, it's not like a one-sided thing. And you have the invitation to chime in, like I said. So in this way, it's like building this, like, staying open to a degree that's not too open, where you're too stretched, or too loose, where you don't pay attention to it. It is maybe, like, helping build this relationship, but there's still a work to be done to build the relationship. For example, like, I'm having the sense that it might be good for me to stop right now to actually really hear what you have to say in order to make this a talk, you know, that has to do with all of us here. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just trying to describe how I'm right now today thinking it would be good to meet the present moment, which is, like, just being really aware, to be not too open and be not too loose, like, to be not too stretched, you know, to, like, trying to account for things that are not here, trying to not pay attention to what's here, but still trying to be, like, really be here. And then once you're here, you're trying to build up in a relationship with every element that's in the room. And, for example, for me, that's also a soccer game. Yeah.
Once you're open, do you mean, like, thinking about complicated things some other time and place that are too abstract? Or what would be too open?
I think too open is, like, for example, like I said, if I'm trying to account for something that I'm not, that's not that it's just an abstract idea. For example, my...
Or maybe not the appropriate time
to
deal with it.
Yeah.
Like obsessing about the soccer game during a Dharma talk could be like too open.
Yeah, like if I go into like speculating who's going to kick the ball right now, it might be like too much. But like, if, you know, it didn't even start yet. So it's like...
You're aware of that, though.
So. I'm aware of that.
When does it start? 11 or 12?
I don't know. I think it's 12.
The recording goes from 11 to 2 this afternoon. Oh. ABC scheduled us, so I think it starts at noon.
Okay.
In 2 hours.
This is important Dharma stuff.
Sure, this
is very honest.
But the game itself is just, you said it was just 90 minutes, right?
Yeah.
That's the time to play?
Yeah.
Excluding penalties, so it's probably a 2 hour.
Yeah.
We have to talk fast.
Well, but like the interesting thing is like, so these are the particularities of, you know, my interest, which is based on some, if I look, like, for me it's like some karmic formation, right, that brings the soccer game as an element into my life. And that karmic formation is mostly connected to people, you know, to people and relationships. And so it just brings it in for me. How do I hold it, you know? That's like the building up the relationship with... Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really trying to find out how to explain this building up of a relationship with something, because like mostly what a relationship is based on my idea of who I am, right? Like, for example, I'm thinking I'm German. I'm thinking I'm having a dad who's totally into soccer. And that, like, builds this relationship with something, an entity that's not here. So there is this present moment, and there is my idea of who I am, and then based on my idea of who I am, I'm building the relationship with things that are in the room and that are outside of the room. And then this relationship, these relationships are happening parallel in multiple dimensions. And we are trying to account for all of them. And that game, that's like this game that we do every moment to moment, is how do we account for each one of these relationships moment to moment seems to create to either our well-being or to our suffering.
Is it possible, like in the noticing of accounting for all that rather than hold those as specific noticings?
Mm-hmm.
Like you notice this and you notice that and you notice the other thing. You remember the soccer game. And,
right.
But you can notice kind of a stream, or what's it called? Stream?
Yeah.
Stream of being?
Yeah, formation.
Yeah. I've often wondered about this too, because there's sort of this encouragement to be in the present moment or to attend the present moment. And yet, if you deliberately try to apply your attention to the present moment, there's a kind of fixing,
mm-hmm.
or a locking, or there's some exclusionary activity in noticing one thing, another thing's forgotten. When, like Dogen said in the Genjo Koan, how does it go? In noticing...
Oh, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark?
The other side is in dark.
Mm-hmm.
And also, no, something is missing.
Oh, yeah.
What is that phrase?
When Dharma...
Completely fills...
Fills your body.
When partially fills one body and mind...
You think
you're complete, but when the Dharma fully, when the truth or the or reality fully fills your body and mind, you feel like something's missing,
mm-hmm.
like something. So we're giving our attention to one thing,
mm-hmm.
and we're actually ignoring
mm-hmm.
something else,
something
and
else.
We feel that loss.
Right.
we feel that we feel a kind of absence or neglect, we're a little bit sorry because in paying attention to one thing, something else is ignored.
Yes.
So that's always been a question for me.
Right. Well, what comes to mind right now is like because we are striving for happiness, right? And so if you see the background of what you pay attention to, then it seems like you are fulfilling, you're still fulfilling.
The background?
If you pay attention to the background at the same time. For example, if you have this big canvas, right, and then you have, you pay attention to this one corner, but if you see at the same time the canvas in the background, then you have the sense you're actually still paying attention to everything else too, mm-hmm. because so with this present moment, if you can see the background that's unchanging at the same time as the changing...
Which is impermanence, huh? Involves impermanence, at least.
Well, that's a big IT, right? The big it, you know? And then, yeah, you want to call it impermanence. Some people call it something else.
Or interconnection.
Some
people might call it permanence.
Some people call it permanence, yeah.
The what?
Some people might call it permanence.
Like, it seems like this is it. So there's this trying to make sense of the relationships, which is this, and is, and then there's this it. And this it is like this background that's it's just like that's where like all the language stops and that people have some trouble to talk about it. But it comes through this, so that's why maybe they say if you pay attention to this, you are able to see it.
See the background as well.
Yeah.
Or see it with background.
This background.
I like this idea of holding, because holding is like, you know, you could express it physically,
mm-hmm.
like this, and I picture holding a cupping water in your hands,
mm-hmm.
because it's very different from grasping. If you hold water in your hands and you try to grasp it,
mm-hmm.
it'll
right.
fall through.
Right, right.
And this holding feeling is like in all relationships, you could hold them and, you know, embrace them,
mm-hmm.
because they're here right now,
right.
you know, and that might be very special. But feels like a challenge or a fine line sometimes to know the difference between that holding, embracing, appreciating, and grasping.
It is fine line. The word of beholding always relates to that for me too. Like you behold something or some event or the moment, because that's what they say of like babies really, really need that in order to thrive, is to feel beheld, like they feel somebody pays attention to them, and then they die if nobody pays attention to a child. So maybe that's, another entry into this moment to say, well, can we trust that us paying attention is already like letting this moment flower into the happiness that we are seeking? You know, like sometimes we're doubting because we think, well, we have to do things in order to make something work. Like I was running earlier around of like, I think I have to do something, you know, in order to make my connection with my dad, whatever, work, you know, whatever is, you know, something that seems important to you. And then to like see, well, but me already noticing that it's important to me, isn't that already like a big power? Like, isn't that already like a big potential that can transform something? I really appreciated what you were listening to about two difficulties that we heard Pongluk Rinpoche say that Dharma students have. One is that they can't believe that this is it because it's too easy. And the second difficulty they're having is like...
It's simple.
It's too simple, yeah.
It's, I can't believe this is it because it's too hard, right? Is that the other one?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, the other one is like, don't I have to do something? You know? This is like the
have
other...
To earn, have to earn it somehow.
You have right? to earn some. Yeah, you have to do something. Yeah. Like if this is it, if like the complete happiness, fulfillment of all my life is happening this very moment, shouldn't I have done something for it? I couldn't just be this. And yet at the same time, everything you did just leads to this moment. I mean, everything you did in your life is just, this is your accumulation right now. You know. And it's beautiful.
But the conditioning is so grasping, you know, that it takes us away all the time, you know, just... I can't do this, or this isn't right, or this isn't good. And when I can just remember, like, that's just conditioning. That's just a thought that I learned through my whole life. And it, you know, I can remember that, and I can be in that in the present moment. But conditioning is very hard.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's why we're invited to build up a relationship to our conditioning.
Yeah.
And then also feel the sadness of all that we missed because our conditioning pushed us the other way of just relaxing into this moment. Like, it's kind of a sad event to, like, really feel, oh my gosh, there was somebody there, you know? Like, I felt that earlier when I was, like, going with my computer to the dining room, and I felt like your presence there cooking, this loving meal, and I'm like, and I'm paying attention to myself, I think. And I'm like, wow, it is a painful moment to like pay attention to only, you know, to like exclude, as you were saying, this exclusion. And to behold that at the same time, because it builds up the relationship to understand, well, why is it happening like that? You know, why is this, how come this formation came here? And I found it so interesting. It's of the why question and how questions and all that. It's a mute point in Buddhist philosophy because they're just saying, well, it's since beginningless time. So each time you, like, you know, you find yourself doing something you actually don't want to do, you know, like stand in front of the fridge and you pull out another ice cream or something, whatever it is. And you, like, you really you feel that sadness of, like, I'm doing it again, you know, something I didn't want to do. Then the mute point of the situation is to ask, why am I doing this? Because it's like, it's happening since beginningless time. So it's like it's not that you're not responsible, but it's like inviting you to accept it and not like, you know, like having all these stories about yourself, why you're doing something that's not wholesome or something. Because those stories just giving another weight into... I'm this person who's so separate from it right now. Like, any story that's, like, separating you from just really opening to this moment, feeling really open and soft. And what it means to be open and soft is all feel the pain. Feel the pain of doing, maybe going, running, cursing a conditioning that's, you know, like, not being able to see something else. I really like that, Michael, about this. Yeah, why am I here, not over there? I think that's a human condition of us always thinking, like, I miss something. I'm missing, you know.
I'm missing the game.
I'm missing the
game. No, the pregame. It's the pregame right now. I remember a story. Someone asked, I think I told this once before, someone asked Koban, do you think during Zazen? And he said, sometimes. And he said, and the person asked, well, what did you think about? And he said, he was right there in your seat, and the mat, the Goza mat, was right in front of him. And he said, I was looking at the Goza mat, and I was thinking about how the Goza mat was made and who made the Goza mat, and it was kind of worn, and I was seeing that it was getting old and mm-hmm. everything. And he came, just as a backstory, he came from a certain part of Japan that's famous for, makes really good mm-hmm. rice, also makes good sake, of course, it makes good rice. But they use a rice straw to make tatami and goza mats. So that area in mm-hmm. northwestern Japan is famous for tatami and mats. So probably he has a history about that. But then I, when I thought about that, I realized he was actually talking about noticing what was right in front of him, first of all, like the introduction to the Diamond Sutra, mm-hmm. where it just notices what's right mm-hmm. in front of him. And also, he was actually investigating the origin factors and the dissolution mm-hmm. factors of the Dharma that was right in front of him. Mm-hmm. He was thinking about what was right there. Mm-hmm. He was considering what was right there. Mm-hmm. Not something else, but what was right in front of him.
Yeah. I like this idea of conditioning, because I recently talked quite extensively with my 91-year-old aunt. And she was telling me about my father, who died long ago, and how he went through seminary school. And she said, yeah, he just basically wanted to talk to an audience. Mm-hmm. So I hesitate to talk. it reminds me of what I learned and what I notice now about sight, bringing up the story that he said of Coben, was that a lot of, and also the problem with words, but also this idea beautifully said by Jonathan about holding, but also grasping. There's things that are happening simultaneously, like sight. So when you really look at sight, most of what you see is actually out of focus.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, look at what you're looking at, mm-hmm. my face. What you see, maybe, in my eyeball, is what's in focus. But most of what you see, though, is out of focus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is sight. So in a similar way, like we use words to focus in, mm-hmm. to explain, but there's mm-hmm. so much more that's mm-hmm. actually happening.
That's right. The background you talked about.
Yeah.
Grasping, yeah. Holding.
Well, so it's interesting. Like grasping, we have this negative label for grasping, but you could also say it's a tension, right? So if you have something not too tight, not too loose, there's still a tension there that is necessary. Like in our Sasan posture, you know, we want to be totally relaxed, but we still have a certain tension sitting up. So
my peripheral vision is not being, I'm not being attentive to my peripheral vision.
Well, it's necessary for that focus, right? To have something be more plural, it's necessary for something else to be focused, so they're dependent on each other.
Perhaps.
They make each other.
Pardon?
They make each other.
It's, I think of a child, a very infant, firstborn, apparently they don't know how to focus.
Mm-hmm.
Focus is maybe learned. I don't know.
Isn't there some story about someone having to walk across the holding a overflowing dish of oil in a bowl, and there's someone behind him with a sword, so he has to focus on that. But if he focuses on that, He has to be aware of his environment at the same time.
Right.
And if he spills any oil, someone can cut off his head. Is that a traditional story?
I think the Buddha talks about meditation and practice like that.
Yeah.
Training your mind.
You have to be aware of the oil, but also can't walk into a you know, a chair or something.
It actually brings me to the both of these. There's something that's under stated in the Zen tradition, which is aspirations. And aspirations, you know, they're very close to intention, you know. But in, maybe I would say, like, aspirations are, like, sometimes having a connotation of having a long vision view, like a long, like something that's, like, really versus, you know, I think it's very arbitrary how to distinguish intention and aspiration. But aspiration, I would say right now, the way they have been used in the Buddhist tradition is, for example, expressing praise and expressing the qualities of the Buddha. So if one were to, for example, to say again about the background and then all these things that come in front that are like temporary and that take our attention and we focus on them, and there's this whole background. And so if we are able to see the elements that compose it, conditioned things that are like happening in front of this background, which is it, like everything like called floor and things. So we could call this floor or this mat, you know, many things. And to call it something that's the closest to the background is like, it would be an aspiration. It would be the, it would be a description for of the background. For example, when Kogun-sama was saying the dependent origination of this mat, you know, he was able to see it. Then this was like the closest description of the background of the mat, of what this mat really is, you know. Or
could you how you're feeling or your digestion, that could be part of the background too, right? I mean, you're observing something, but maybe you still have the taste of having chewed an almond before, and that's still in your mouth. So it's kind of like everything is with something else in a way.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not. Nothing's alone.
Nothing is isolated. Yeah. It's just like then in the tradition they confront us with very exalted images of, you know, like, and that's where sometimes it differs in the Zen tradition, because they really like to talk more about the almond taste in the mouth. But in the, for example, in a other tradition, the Tibetan tradition or in the Indian tradition, they talk about Mahandava flowers falling from the sky and jewel trees, and, you know, they're like having words that are a little more exalted just to describe this moment. And it was one of these, like, you know, like sometimes you look out, the trees could look like jewel trees, you know. It's really just like how you switch your perception a little bit, you know. But, you know, because, like, for example, we have ceremonies here and they say homage to Shakyamuni Buddha or homage to Avalokiteshvara, right? Then that is a word, it's a reference. But if you say, oh, Shakyamuni is a reference for somebody who lived 2,500 years ago, then we're missing the point of what he was trying to demonstrate. He was trying to demonstrate a quality of something that's right here to which we can awaken to. That was kind of his teaching career. And so to have, to say Shakyamuni Buddha right now would be a reference point for something that's here. So in the same way, we can... these aspirations or these like songs that are these songs and these descriptions of dependent origination, of emptiness, of Buddhas, of these are words and categories that we use as something to name it, you know. Then it's good to be kind of like our task to be able to first of all, like, completely 100% experience our moment, and then build up this relationship to it. And it's something. Yes.
I just really appreciate these terms. I've never heard before of this being the particularities of the present moment and it being the background that kind of is holding all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, what's the relationship between this and it?
Couple letters.
Yeah.
Mutual support. Mutual integration and support. Just some more words.
I mean, maybe we could say that this itself is it, like form itself is emptiness. This is this particular form, and it is the background emptiness. What's their relationship? Mutual support.
It's dependent. It is dependent.
Is it dependent on this? Is this dependent on it?
Because of this, there's that.
Is it?
Because of it, there's this.
But they're interchangeable. Could be it and this, or this and that. Mm-hmm. Do I
have focusing on?
Didn't the Cat in the Hat say something about this?
They all do.
You have to talk in rhyme.
I mean, that's the beauty. Like, once you like tap into it, then everything is talking about it. Do you have these moments that everything is suddenly?
This is it.
This is it.
Wait, I have to write this down.
Kind of seems to go back to that simplicity you were saying. You were saying that Zen students, the two things they realized was that the first thing is that they can't believe it's that simple.
Right.
Back to that. Like, oh my gosh, that this is it, and this is it. Like, it's always been it.
Yeah.
There's a poem by Thich Nhat Hanh that goes something along the lines of, it's like a love poem. Like, in my love for you, I express my love for the whole world.
Mm.
I guess it feels like an example of, you know, in my appreciation for or being with the particular, I recognize the background, the whatever the.
Yeah.
I want to share maybe the story about the oil and the guy who swore in dynamic meditation reminds me. I hope it's not completely off topic, but it's kind of my experience. In the martial arts way, Japanese way, in all the doors, and so in what my master was teaching me, the Bushido and Nippo, was exactly, which I find it perfectly to me, in merging the background, the it, and this. Is during the fight. Because
mm-hmm.
all the training, all the meditation, everything that you do in that very moment is a flow where you cannot have expectations, you have to be very, very present. And the other thing is you have to love the moment, yourself and your opponent,
mm-hmm.
the other way around. In this moment, everything is it, in this moment. And that flows. And you love it, and that's why the poetry and like the somewhere I read to describe in that moment they understand, appreciate the, you know, the flowers flowing down to the trees, even if they may are facing death, or it doesn't really matter because this is a very moment where you cannot have fears, you cannot think, you have to be here. And this is okay, and when you do it, that even in training is a really meditation in action where. The background and yourself and what you're doing is the same at the same moment. And you're forced to do it. The moment you think, then you're hit or you stop. So I find this very, to me, a way to integrate meditation into practice. So I wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Another thought I had when you were talking about that. Holding the water, cupped water, instead of grasping the water or squishes around, and I recall this image last weekend that was, I think Hakuin had this image about compassion, is like, whenever you scoop up the water, the moon is there, reflected. And so it's kind of like, the water is this, and the moon, or it, is reflected there. But if you like grasp it, then the moon's gone too.
Mm-hmm.
Squish the moon.
Supermoon.
Supermoon is just like, you don't even have to put it there, it's already there.
Dogen used that metaphor.
Yeah.
Cohen,
mm-hmm.
The moon does not, the water's not broken,
mm-hmm.
and the moon does not obstruct the person. So.
And the depth of the drop is the height of the moon.
Yeah.
Even a little this contains all of it.
Mm-hmm.